resources. We have work to do to integrate our operations, but it's a really exciting time for us. We're both independent investigative and media organizations in Madison, Wisconsin. The Progressive has a tremendous history going back to 1909. It has been the place of some of the best writing, I think, in our country.
Lisa, we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you for being with us, president of Progressive, Inc., and that does it for our show. I'll be speaking at Dartmouth College on Friday, May 2nd at 5 o'clock at Moore Hall. Go to our website, democracynow.org, for more details, and on May 17th in Stowe, Vermont. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Al-Kafani, Masood Rabi, Karen Dina, Gazdar, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, and Sharina Ndura. Miguel Nogueira and Mike DeFilippo are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Gadars, Brenda Murad. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermin Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland. Today's guests are Thomas and Ash from the Portland IWW, and we'll talk about the history and the meaning of May Day.
Do you see it? It's all around us. It's an assault on our rights, our freedoms, our food, our jobs, our children's education, and ultimately an assault on the only life support system we have, Mother Earth.
Earth Day to May Day, a global convergence for climate justice, is taking place around the world and here in Cascadia from April 22nd to May 1st. The 10 days of action will include teach-ins, protests, call-in campaigns, and direct action. KBOO is a sponsor of local events and is committed to bringing you full coverage of the global climate convergence. Find out more at kboo.fm/Earth Day Mayday. That's kboo.fm/Earth Day Mayday.
Begin organizing in your community for people, planet, and peace over profit. Join us.
KBOO is looking for a membership director. Duties include database management, conducting mailings, producing reports, assisting members managing pledge drives, and, of course, working closely with other staff members here at the station. The ability to work with numerous people in a fast-paced environment is essential. This is a mix of part-time and full-time work, with 40 hours per week being required leading up to, during, and following each membership drive. A full benefit package is included. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Our organization does not discriminate on the basis of age, race, religion, color, sex, national origin, marital status, sexual orientation, class, creed, physical or mental disability. For a more detailed job description and printable job application, go to kboo.fm, search for hiring, H-I-R-I-N-G. And to apply, please send a resume via email to hiring, H-I-R-I-N-G, at kboo.org. The application deadline is 5 p.m. on Wednesday, April 30th, 2014.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale. Full Circle accepts like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, and accessories for consignment or store credit. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont, and on the web at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com or fullcircleresaleportland.com.
workers. They toil night and day, by hand and by brain, to earn your pay who for centuries long past, for no more than your bread, have bled for your countries and counted your dead in the factories and mills, in the shipyards and mines. We've often been told to keep up with the times, but our skills are not needed. They've streamlined the job, and we slide, rule, and stop, watch our blind day of our die. But when the sky darkens and the prospect is war, who's given a gun and then pushed to the fore and expected to die for the land of our birth, though we've never owned one handful of earth?
And good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7. And my name is Paul, and this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. And you were just listening to Dick Goggin with a Workers song. Wish we could have heard the whole thing. But I want to get into the discussion of May Day. And I have a couple guests today, Tomas and Ash from Portland IWW. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm just going to read this little blurb I did for the KBOO website. Talk about this show. May Day's ancient origin is a celebration of the Earth's fecundity and the beginning of summer, and its modern incarnation as an International Workers' Day may not seem to have much in common, but they are linked by the rise of industrial capitalism, which has, on the one hand, uprooted masses of people from the land and its cycles and sustenance, and on the other, forced most people to depend on an alienating system of wages, rents, interest, and profits that benefits a relative few. Movements throughout history, from the diggers in England to the early socialist communes to the 60s counterculture to the radical environmental movement in various ways, have, and in various degrees, combined a return to direct connection to the land with a resistance to the alien system of capital. So we're going to talk about this and the origins of the Workers' May Day more recently at the end of the 19th century, as well as the Portland May Day event. And the number to call after about, 10 minutes after we get started here will be 503-231-8187. Well, that's my take on what we want to talk about. Floor is open to you guys.
Well, first, some interesting facts about May Day. The modern International Workers' Day. I know that Paul and Ash have some other interesting things. We're not just going to be talking about facts today. We want to hear people's opinions. We'll get to some questions. So May Day, it's an official holiday in over 80 countries. It's a day off, a federal holiday in over 80 countries. The United States is obviously not one of them, nor is Canada. But in terms of how it became International Workers' Day, I just learned this last night, actually, this specific part. I didn't realize that in 1884, there was a convention by the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions that unanimously set May 1st of 1886 as the date by which the 8-hour workday would become standard. So they gave themselves almost 2 years to organize around the country for a general strike to happen on May 1st, 1886, to force an 8-hour working day. And that was still this is still pre-weekend, right? They hadn't come up, labor unions hadn't come up with the weekend yet. They were just trying to get people to be able to work 7 days a week, but only 8 hours a day. So that's how that happened. Most people are more familiar with the Haymarket Affair, which happened 3 days after the general strike began. And that happened because on May 3rd, police shot and killed several striking workers. So the following day, there was a larger protest in which someone, it's never been known, someone threw a bomb, a couple of cops died, couple of workers died, and then later seven people were sentenced to death, one to 15 years in prison. Four of those people were actually hung, and three were pardoned, and another committed suicide instead of being hung. So that series of events kind of like established that May 1st is International Workers Day, and from there it went all around the world. There were strikes in solidarity, and every year since then, that has been the day that everybody and the workers around the world have recognized as Workers Day.
So you're saying after that, those events at Haymarket, there was strikes in solidarity around the world in the immediate aftermath of that?
Yes.
So obviously there is a lot of communication going on. Maybe people don't think about that time was very kind of a heyday of, you know, workers' movements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were, I mean, in the United States, you know, so this convention in 1884 was held in October. So it was a little bit over a year and a half they had to organize this pre-telephone. On May 1st of 1886, between 300,000 and 500,000 workers went on strike across the United States. It's a massive number of workers to get organized to go on strike on a day when you don't have any telephones or radio.
Ash?
Until now, some of the history is a little sparse, I think, in just my knowledge of what's happened. I know that in between that time, in the United States, it's now become Law Day. And then, you know, the Labor Day that we think of was created. I think it's really interesting that, you know, our Labor Day is, you know, what do you think of? You think of barbecues and apple pie and, you know, May Day is actually the real Labor Day for workers to celebrate. Some other interesting things I found out about is that, you know, Franco got rid of it, and it wasn't celebrated in Spain for some time.
Generalissimo Franco.
And in May of 1977 in Istanbul, 36 people died, hundreds were wounded, and 453 were arrested. And it wasn't until 2010 that the first May Day celebration since that took place. In 2006, you see incorporation of the immigrant right movement. And now over the last couple of years, you saw a big pop off with when Occupy was going on. 2012 May Days were pretty great. And I think they're still going strong around the world.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I lived in Italy for many years, and it's just interesting to see sort of these cycles of, you know, reclaiming power and then that reclaimed power getting re-co-opted and this kind of back and forth and back and forth. Because, you know, like the official May Day celebration in Torino, which is the city near where I was living, you know, it was like all the official unions and, you know, with their big banners, like, and all the, you know, the associated politicians making their speeches. So it's kind of like, most of my friends who are a lot more radical were like, you know, maybe they would have a, you know, maybe they would go and, you know, get together in their own little part of the march and stuff. But yeah, it's like, it's hard to maintain the edge, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, this question I raised, the ancient origins and like what it has to do. I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting, that thought that, like, I don't know how forced it is, but, you know, it's like on the one hand, pre-industrialism, you know, people, sure, there was always, you know, there's always been exploitation through, you know, feudalism and various things, but there was still these ancient traditions of connection because people lived, you know, closer to the land, basically. And even if they were living under feudalism, they tended to have their own garden. You know, they tended to be able to produce something for themselves. It's like, it's only been since industrialism that there's been this just massive co-optation and, you know, expropriation of our labor and everything. It's like there's almost, you know, we have to carve out whatever, like our rental spaces and, you know, we no longer really have our public spaces very much. It's like, it's really hard even to imagine that the way that people had these long long chains of tradition that were celebrated. I mean, like I was doing some. I'm doing a folk show tomorrow. On the, you know, it's the first music show in the morning of May Day, and I was researching the history, the music about May Day, and it's an incredibly rich tradition. It's like it really is still celebrated even after all this, you know, even after the enclosure of the commons and centuries of exploitation, there still remains these traditions in England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. And there's this, and it's in the music, and it's like we don't really have that very much in this country, so we kind of like don't feel that very much. So anyway, it's just really interesting. I mean, just the number of songs about May Day are like, it's extraordinary. Because I've been trying to like peg different shows to like different seasonal events and stuff, and this is like a really great wealth of resources. So anyway, so I guess the point I was making was that, you know, there's this old origins to this May Day and the Maypole and May dancing, which then, you know, like the hippies of the 60s tried to bring back. And, you know, now there's like, who knows what, you know, quote, new age sort of ceremonial aspects around it. And, but it is something real. It was something real. Cause like the fact that the earth comes back to life is something you just can't ignore. You know, it's like, and so people celebrate these things. So I guess what I was saying then, the rise of industrial capitalism and the rise of this new, you know, proletariat working class and them taking over May Day, it just seems to be an interesting coincidence, is I guess all I was saying.
Well, I mean, well, first of all, let's let everybody know, yes, if they didn't know. So tomorrow is May Day, which is, for me, a very important day, of course. Tomorrow there will be a rally and a march. The rally starts at 3 p.m. We're gathering down at in the South Park blocks around Szymanski's Fountain at Southwest Salmon and 9th Avenue. The march leaves at 4. It'll last about an hour and a half and go all around downtown. We'll make more announcements about this, but everybody should show up if you can. If you can't make it by 4 o'clock, I'm sure you won't have any trouble if you're downtown figuring out where we are.
And looks like we do have one caller, so Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to put in a little plug for a display about May Day at the Central Library in downtown. If people want to learn more about May Day and the social and economic justice issues that gave birth to it and have been its legacy, go down to Central Library, which is at 10th and Yamhill in downtown Portland, and it's in the Science and Business Room.
Is that you want to say anything more about it, or I guess just people should go and check it out?
Yeah, I wanted to just put a plug in for it because, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet, but I think that books, you know, will go into a depth on topics that, you know, you just aren't going to find on the internet unless you happen to find a scanned book.
So are there like photographs and stuff?
Yeah, there's, you know, a bunch of books about Haymarket, but also a bunch of books about the particular legacy of the fight for the shortened work week and work day. Lots of books up there on early IWW history and the late 19th century labor history that led to the IWW.
Great. All right. Well, thanks for calling, Joe. Okay, and the number is 503-231-8187 if you want to join this conversation about May Day, the various aspects of it, or other aspects that you want to bring up.
Yeah, getting back to before Joe's great plug for some awesome books, we were, Tomas and I went and had a beer last night, and we're talking about this, and we're actually, came to mind, you know, why did they pick May 1st? And I think your point about the history of that and the rebirth, I think is a good indication of why they chose such an important day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was reading here just before we went on the air that actually the Catholic Church, with their reformed calendar, whenever that was, must be centuries ago, I imagine, they made May 1st the feast of Saint Joseph the Worker. And, Tomas, you made the point that, yeah, that's kind of like the Christian Church kind of co-opted or whatever took over many of the ancient pagan holidays from, you know, the solstices, the equinoxes, etc. And so that's quite possibly why that came about. I'm sure there's a whole history there. And on the other hand, I mentioned that it could be that because, you know, like in Chicago, where the events where you're talking about was not exclusively, but pretty heavily Catholic, with a lot of the immigrants being from Catholic countries, could be they made May 1st that for their own political reasons. It's always interesting how people are trying to opportunistically or, you know, pragmatically make use of these things that have deep meaning for people, I guess. You know, it's like connect. We're always trying to connect to people from where they're at. So,
yeah, well,
all sides, both the powers of status quo and the popular struggles also.
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, this day is really, I mean, as we talked about, this day is really powerful and important for a lot of people throughout history. I mean, so much so that the Catholic Church felt the need to try to paper over a pagan holiday by giving it a Catholic ceremonial, you know,
spin,
right? to try to push that day as there's Beltane is one of them. There's a whole bunch of pagan holidays that fall on or around May 1st for the same reason. The Catholic Church, you know, as they do, as Paul said, with everything else, to try to paper it over so that people forget the pagan roots of all these important days. But so, you know, the same thing happened after May Day. In fact, immediately after the Haymarket Affair and that very first the first general strike on May 1st, 1886, the very next year, Grover Cleveland, at the behest of the great AFL, passed Labor Day in September, as opposed to on May 1st, which is where everybody else wanted wanted Workers' Day to be. The AFL went along and buddy-buddy with the president and decided to do it on a completely different day because Grover Cleveland was worried, and I'm sure the AFL too, that the communists and anarchists that were becoming more powerful and have prevalent ideas at the time would they didn't want them to have something to celebrate. So
that was the next year after this.
It was a year after the Haymarket Affair
that
Labor Day got passed. And actually, the state of Oregon was the first state to have Labor Day be on the first Monday of September? But I don't know.
Well, we all know Oregon's always been on the leading edge of progressivism.
Oh, yeah. Well, so then after that, there was in 1921, this is another attempt to paper over the importance of the holiday. There was a day that is later called Loyalty Day, that was originally called Americanization Day, which is, did I say 1921? This was 1921, during the first Red Scare.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. And then that was created expressly to try to replace May Day, which, of course, obviously it failed. But then back in 1958, Eisenhower must have had some real, I don't know what was going on, because in the same year, he both decreed that May 1st would be Law Day, quote, by the law, in appreciation of the people's liberties and the reaffirmation of their loyalty to the United States, and Loyalty Day, formally decreed in the same year. And Loyalty Day says the very similar kind of thing. Loyalty Day is a special day for the reaffirmation of loyalty to the United States and for the recognition of the heritage of American freedom.
Well, we really got to reclaim this day after, man, this is intense history.
But you might see on a lot of calendars, a lot of like American standard calendars that you buy, you might see Law Day written in on the date tomorrow, and you'll be like, what is that? You know? But that's, you know, further attempt to try to suffocate it and push it out. And by and large, I think that it is. I mean, International Workers' Day being celebrated on May Day isn't that popular in this country. It hasn't been because it's been squashed for decades. I mean, you can see there's a history. There's a 130-year history of trying to squash this date in the United States, while it's still powerful in other places. I mean, last year in Jakarta, Indonesia, there were 120,000 people that came out on May Day to celebrate. You know, these are people from places all around the world, a wide variety of cultures. There's no uniformity in who celebrates International Workers' Day, yet the place that it started doesn't celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. Chicago. So let's you know, open up the phone lines. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Rainer is on the line. Hi, Rainer.
How's it going, man?
Pretty good, pretty good.
I just wanted to, this is kind of trivial, I guess, but when I was in elementary school in Texas, we had an amazing principal of our school. She was like 80 years old, and she dyed her hair red, and every year she had a maypole and a a May celebration, and we would all, you know, we had a big maypole, and we learned all these dances, you know, that I don't know where she got them from, but when I was thinking about it, she must have been born in, you know, in the 1860s, so she probably knew, you know, all about the Haymarket bombs and everything else that had to do with May Day. And also she was like really into, well, I guess, fairies and elves and stuff like that, you know, too.
Was she, where was she from? What country was her family from? Do you know?
Oh, she was from Texas.
But I mean, she didn't have any particular, you know, ethnic or whatever obvious origins.
No, she was a gringo, you know. But really remarkable person.
So even gringos can be, you know.
Yeah.
No, because I was reading, you know, in this Wikipedia, you know, it's like, that's my go-to, you know, when I'm preparing shows, I always look up the Wikipedia. You know, they talked about all these different countries with these really rich May Day traditions, Romania, Bulgaria, Ireland, Finland.
Yeah.
And then, but, you know, the United States, here, let's see. May Day was also celebrated by some early European settlers of the American continent in some parts of the United States. May baskets are made. There are small these are small baskets usually filled with flowers or treats and left at someone's doorstep. The giver rings the bell and runs away. The person receiving the basket tries to catch the fleeing giver. If caught, a kiss is exchanged. I know that Ash is not. You know
oh,
about
I did
this?
That as a kid.
Really?
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Are you serious?
Well, I grew up in Oregon, and so maybe, I don't know, it has something to do with that. But and then when I moved to Indiana, I never heard anybody do it. But yeah, we used to take little strips of construction paper and weave like a little basket, fold it into like a cone. And then my
mom. So the Easter basket maybe is a co-optation of that.
Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, my mom would bring in flowers and we'd put them together, and I always left them on the neighbor's porch, and then you run away. And I don't know the point of running away because you never get to see the reaction. But
well, I'll let Rainer go on here again. But before you go on, Rainer, just invite callers. I mean, this is just fascinating. That's what's great about doing live radio. You get all these interesting stories. If anybody else has any stories, you know, about celebrating May Day from whatever perspective, please call in. I mean, this is like really rich history. This is how we maintain and reclaim our history. So 503-231-8187 is a number. Rainer, go ahead.
It was just that I remember it was a really big deal because, you know, we like practiced for it for, weeks beforehand and everything. It was always a lot of fun because, you know, we didn't have to be in class. We go to the auditorium, learn songs and dances and stuff like that. That's all I wanted to say. So thanks for the program.
Thanks for calling, Rainer.
Yeah, if anybody knows of any maypole ceremonies going on tomorrow, please let us know. Yeah, I mean, if you want to make them public.
Something, you know, we've talked a little bit about the history. I'm interested in hearing, you know, some other people call in it and answer kind of this question of, you know, does May Day help build a working class consciousness in America? Being that, you know, it's not as much celebrated, you know, doing a little bit of research about the different celebrations that have happened over the world in the last even recent 5-year history is really inspiring to me. And it's not something that you don't really hear about on the news. You know, tomorrow, I don't know how much is actually going to get covered. And so I'm interested to know, you know, does May Day help build that? You know, when people hear programs like this, hear all these little bits of facts about this, you know, does that inspire them? Does that make them think about their own rights as a worker in this country and the future of the labor movement?
Well, we do have a caller, maybe in response to that question or others. Mitch, you're on the air.
Yeah, no, actually, I wanted to recommend that if you're doing the music program for May Day, Paul, that you dig out the New York. There was a great Irish folk singer in New York named Jack Hardy, who died a few years ago. And he had a song called May Day from one of his first records, and it might be in the KBOO library, and the words are right on point to what you're talking about, whether the traditions are Gaelic or whether they're in Indiana. There's a lot of similarity.
Yeah, no, I actually found, not actually the one I was looking for, but yeah, I found Jack Carty. I think I may have found that song on YouTube, on the internet. Now you can find just about anything there, it seems like.
Great.
Well, yeah, he's a wonderful, wonderful traditional musician, Jack Carty. What a voice, and boy.
And it all comes together on May Day, so thank you.
All right, well, thank you. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. You are listening to KBOO Portland. My name's Paul. I'm here with Tomas and Ash, a couple local IWW activists, and many other things besides. And you too can be on the air if you want to call up. We are talking about May Day in all of its various manifestations. I just want to go back to the 1921 and Americanization Day. That really struck me. Because,
mm-hmm.
I got really interested in that time period. I was briefly in West Virginia a few years ago, just for a couple months, working against mountaintop removal in southern West Virginia. And I started to learn about the Battle of Blair Mountain, and was in 1921. And that was amazing. Well, because earlier than that, actually, I had, like, going back and forth to Italy all these years, and then I kind of learned about the mountaintop removal thing. And I started to learn about the role of Italians in the coal mine wars. Like, even way before that, they were, for some reason, well, they were shuttled there to southern West Virginia from, like, Ellis Island, you know, with these poor immigrants would come and not know the language. They were like, someone would speak their language, and, like, there'd be an agent. The coal companies would have an agent there, and like, oh, yeah, we got a good job for you. Come with us. Put them on a train, then end up in these horrible coal mines in West Virginia. If not, you know, whatever, working on the railroads or in the factories or wherever. Anyway, because so many of the Italians, and not just Italians, but like Hungarians and Germans and others, because there was such a ferment, you know, I mean, you know, we're talking about the 1880s, 90s, but all the way into the early 20th century, there was this really heyday, those 20, 30, 40 years of kind of the rise, you know, with Karl Marx and the International Working Men's Association and the International and all that, there was this heyday of socialist, communist, anarchist ideas. And so a lot of the, a certain decent percentage of immigrants coming to this country had those ideas and really infused the whole movement with those ideas. And so the Italians were like, they were serious. They were really the real hotheads, and they, you know, and they were also armed. I mean, they had this amazing story. So anyway, so I got into that history, and they, you know, led some of these big, major strikes. The Long Ton strike of, like, Paint Branch strike of, I think, 1917 or something like that. Anyway, and then the Battle of Blair Mountain, where they went against the, you know, 15,000 armed miners marched to... whatever, long story. And so we did a reenactment of that in 2011 on the 90th anniversary. It was really interesting. So anyway, 1921, Americanization Day, yeah. It's like there's all these foreign workers with all these radical ideas. Mm-hmm. May Day, you know, all this together. It's fascinating history.
Yeah, and the role of immigrants in May Day is still there. You know, I talked about it all in 2006. It becomes...
Oh, yeah, I hadn't made that connection, yeah.
But actually, you know, the whole history of May Day comes from immigrants trying to stand up for their rights as workers, and that's still a major theme this year, especially with all the deportations going on in the country. And that's a big demand, which is, you know, stop the deportations. And so tomorrow, people hear probably a good amount of that. From some of our speakers.
Once again, tomorrow, People Over Profit, Resources to Communities, Not Corporations, Portland's May Day Celebration Rally at 3 p.m., March from 4 to 5:30 p.m., meet in the South Park blocks, at Southwest Salmon and 9th. Many endorsers, organizations standing together, United Auto Workers, IWW, Portland, PSU.
There's too many on that list to read.
All right. For more information on events in Salem, mm-hmm. why does it say that? Contact 503-4, that's because Salem is in our listening area, that's why I'm saying that, 409-2473. 503-409-2473 if you want to hang out in Salem. Mm-hmm. And the phone number is 503-231-8187. What's that? Brian? Brian.
Hey, good morning. How
good
are
morning.
You guys?
Good.
So I just, two things. I have a National Audubon Society calendar, and May 1st is blank. There's nothing on there.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Why doesn't that surprise us? Oh, sorry. I don't mean to...
So, you know, and another thing is when I was coming up, I'm 54, and I was in school in the 60s and up through the 70s, you know, late 60s up through the late 70s. But anyway, you know, we after a certain point, we were always taught that May Day was a communist holiday. And, you know, that's what the Russians celebrated, and that the people who celebrated it in other countries had communist leanings. And so, you know, that's the line we got in Massachusetts and when I moved down to Florida. So, you know, it was used as a propaganda tool that if you celebrated May Day, it was a communist holiday. Yeah. So, you know, that was supposed to scare us. Frankly, I always felt left out. You know, I thought, well, gee, you know, the whole world's celebrating this great holiday, and they're having fun, and we're sitting here in school learning about how the communists are going to take us over. Anyway, and then I read Abby Hoffman, and all was lost.
Or gained.
Gained, but all was I was lost to the system, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that was a great call, actually. I didn't think that anybody would actually look at their calendar and call, but now I'm interested in people to look at the calendar that they've got or different calendars and call up and let us know what's on the calendar. Is there anything on that in that space? Is it Law Day? Is it Loyalty Day? Is it something else? Is it St. Joseph the Worker Day? What does your calendar say? And beyond what your calendar says, do you have any prior, before looking at that calendar spot and seeing what's written or not written in there, did you have any association with May 1st? What does it mean to you? Do you get it mixed up with Cinco de Mayo? Do you think it's a Mexican holiday, which actually is only celebrated in the state of Puebla, but nobody knows that? But give a call. Let us know. What, you think that's funny?
No, I just think it's, I like the plug you put in there and the specific knowledge you have of it. I think it's
okay. Well, you know, I think that, again, I want to make another, like, associate, just tie these things together. You know, he was talking about, you know, May Day is a communist day. So, you know, I was mentioning Americanization Day 1921 that you brought up, Tomas, and then 1958, Law Day and Loyalty Day. What is that associated with? That's associated mm-hmm. with the next Red Scare and McCarthyism and anti-communist hysteria. So, obviously, Loyalty Day, it seems... It's like May Day has like been in the crosshairs mm-hmm. for quite a long time. Interesting. So again, we have do we have another caller? Harry, you're on the air.
Yeah. Oh, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Yes. On my calendar, I have St. Joseph the Worker Day.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
What's your what kind of calendar is it?
Well, it's an actual app for Catholic radio.
Oh.
Well, that makes that stands to reason then.
Yeah. But to go on to add on to our last caller about May Day being a communist day, what the media would do, they would show, of course, Red Square in Moscow, the troops marching by with their new weapons. Of course, that was supposed to scare us. Mm. But it didn't. But anyway, my comment is I'm glad I'm a retired union worker, and my life was and is a lot better because I belong to a union. My contemporaries, brothers, friends and stuff who didn't belong to a union, they had to deal with the Labor Department. So labor is a big thing in our country and our government. Do you have any comments about our labor department?
About the labor department, like the U.S. Department of Labor?
Yes, the U.S. Labor Department. Of course, the state of Oregon has one, too.
I mean, I've personally dealt with both the state and the federal on a couple of occasions. I mean, it's, you know, they enforce the laws that were created to keep labor unions down. Lots of them actually expressly because of actions that my union did back in the day. That's why general strikes are illegal in the United States. And that's another way, actually, that they tried to paper over the May Day as a holiday, is that they made general strikes illegal. Which is the kickoff of that whole thing.
I never knew that. Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Again, the number is 503-231-8187. We'd like to invite people to call in and talk about whatever you want to talk about relating to May Day, pagan celebrations, workers' struggles, the conflict between grassroots unionism and bureaucratic unionism, whatever. Field is open. The lines are all yours. There's three lines open, in fact. So occupy the lines. Occupy the lines. Occupy the airwaves. That's what we're doing, and we'd like to bring other people in, too.
Yeah, that point about grassroots versus, you know, the union bureaucracy, I think, is really interesting.
Well, I mean, that ties in with what Paul was saying earlier, and I know that Paul and I probably have some disagreements on some other things, as we always do.
Makes life interesting.
But
that'd be an interesting show.
But Paul, I know that you feel like, you know, a big issue for you is like industrialism itself, the modern like mass production of things like that, and
the dark satanic mills of Blake. Yeah.
Right. Well, I guess what, you know, the bureaucratic unions facilitate that kind of thing continue to exist. Community-based unions, democratic unions, are much more likely to be able to change what the methods of production are, and the kind of damages to our communities and our earth that manufacture affects. And a lot of times you hear of the big what we call business unions that rubber stamp contracts. They don't care. Nothing in any of those contracts is ever about what it's doing to the environment. I mean, the fact that they go out and that there are unions that go out and lobby in favor of the CRC, you know, a 12-lane bridge, just because it's going to produce some temporary jobs without considering what the long-term effect is.
Not to mention oil pipelines and oil trains and, you know,
all the other
stuff.
Where do you end? Exactly. I mean, and then even, you know, yeah, I guess the point is that that's what's end up happening is that the business unions a lot of times they work hand in hand with the capitalists. They have the same goal. They want the capitalists to do well so that workers can have a job. And the one thing that they do is that they make sure that the workers that have the jobs for the capitalists get paid a better wage and have a pension. You know, but that's about it. But there's no stewardship of the environment. There's no consideration at any point for that. You know, so it's like this very temporary thing, just trying to ride this wave until the waves rise.
Crashes.
Yeah.
So we apparently we did stimulate our callers, and we do have three. But before we go to them, just hang on 30 seconds. I just want to let you know what's coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives. Per Fagerin speaks with radio host Tom Hartman, author of over 20 books, about his latest, The Crash of 2016. Speaking of the last wave. The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America and What We Can Do to Stop It. At 9:30, the guest is Gerald Friedman, professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts and author of Reigniting the Labor Movement. There you go. All connected. He will talk about the economic benefits of single-payer universal health care for low-wage workers, unions, and community groups. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. 10:15 on Flashpoints, an encore report on U.S.-supported wars against the Democratic Republic of Congo. Also, fiction writers in occupied Palestine speak out. And at 11 on the Radio Zine, Jimmy Tardy hosts S. Brian Wilson and Mike Hassel in the KBOO studios to talk with Kent State shooting survivor Joe Lewis about the shootings, the war, and what it all means. Thanks so much, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And with that, let's go to a first of our three callers. Diana, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. You're on.
Thank you. Well, I am a KBOO member and would like to put out a plug that's sort of like paying your union dues to be a KBOO member, because it provides us with an opportunity to get sight of working people out, which is not very available anyplace else. And I would also like to tie in what you were talking about earlier. I couldn't get through earlier in regards to May Day and its pagan origins. And obviously, the rebirth of the earth at this point in time is a support for human existence on this earth. And I was delighted to hear Ash talk about the woven construction May Day baskets, which I also did. My mother was of German descent from Indiana, and we made May baskets wherever we lived, which was, you know, Indiana and Montana and Oregon. And I think part of the idea of that was to offer a delightful surprise. And so if you didn't run too far away, you might be able to see the delighted surprise on the face of the person at the door. And Ash said something else, which I really wanted to respond to, which is that, yes, it is essential that this movement connect internationally, that Portland workers, metro area workers, understand that we are part of a working class, which is this country in the entire world. And the work that the folks on the show today have been doing is really essential. So much of the labor movement has, as we know, been co-opted or deteriorated. The service unions are doing a much better job of being close to my understanding of the original mission of unions, and the industrial unions, as was mentioned earlier, not so much. And the amount of work that's left to be done is huge, and I think an international, you know, immigrant working class focus on May Day is really important to energize us old folks and to be inspired by the young folks who are carrying this forward, because we obviously have a lot of work to do. Thank you all for your efforts.
Thanks for calling, Diana. Let's go straight to our next caller. Pam. Hello, Pam.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
I was kind of chuckling as I listened to some of the folks talk about May Day. I did check my calendars. There's nothing on any of them for today. And like Diana, I was listening to her comment. I grew up in Oregon. My mother's from Indiana, so maybe this is an Indiana thing. But May Day for us growing up, I'm 60, so I grew up in the Cold War era, was getting dressed up in white dresses, putting up maypoles, and dancing around the maypoles, which apparently is a pagan observation, although we certainly didn't know that as children. And we definitely made the paper cones with flowers and hang them on the doorbell for our mom and ring the door and run. Mm-hmm. That was all it was to us as kids. And I guess we weren't very socially aware. I had no idea until I was probably in high school and began to see some of the military parades on TV on May Day, and like one of your previous callers, you know, felt like it kind of tainted this, what was just a very innocent, fun holiday for us as kids. And that whole Cold War era, the influence from the McCarthy era, I suppose, really sort of infested some fear into that holiday for us. So that was, we became a little bit embarrassed to be celebrating this holiday with flowers on doorknobs when military parades were going through the streets of Moscow and we were feeling threatened, and it was a very uncomfortable place to be. I'm very happy to see the refocus on the holiday, more on social issues related to labor, because there's a potential for real impact with that. So I've seen it go from dancing around maypoles to being terrified of the invading forces to let's stand up and take some social action around labor.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, ma'am.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Before we take the next one, can we make another announcement? About,
oh, sure. Go for it.
So tomorrow is May Day, as we've been talking about for the whole hour. There will be a rally and a march. It's downtown in the South Park block, Shemansky Fountain at Southwest 9th and Salmon. The rally starts at 3. The march starts at 4. March lasts about an hour and a half. Tables will be set up by about 1 o'clock. So if you can't come by for that, if you work downtown and you have a lunch or a break sometime in the afternoon, just come over to that location, and there'll be a lot of information. You can meet people. You can spend some time there and help us celebrate May Day.
Mm-hmm. The Wobblies will be there with our red balloons, so just look for that.
If you want to stand with some Wobblies, we will have red balloons, and you'll probably see a lot of IWW shirts, mm-hmm. I would imagine.
And then afterwards, there's actually going to be a show at the Red and Black Cafe at 6 p.m. They're going to be open till midnight, like tradition stands. And so that should be good, so people should come by.
And the Red and Black is at?
It's at 400 Southeast 12th Avenue.
Just a few blocks from where we are speaking right now in inner southeast Portland Buckman neighborhood. And we have, a full slate of callers once again. Let's get them in. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hello.
I'm on my Bluetooth. Can you hear me?
We got you. Locked in.
Happy May Day.
Happy May Day tomorrow.
Actually, you know, before you go on, start, Linda, I read that, like, in Sweden, for example, I don't know how widespread this is, when it became International Workers' Day, they basically just kind of, like, made the day before the traditional celebration. So it was, mm-hmm. like, last of April Day. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and there's some that all celebrate over the weekend.
Yeah, and the night before is always, mm-hmm. you know, May Day yeah. Eve. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Linda.
That's fascinating. Well, I like your previous caller, Diana. I checked all my calendars, and not one of them, including my iPhone, says a word about May Day, and that doesn't surprise me, I guess. It's just great to have this opportunity to talk a little bit about a phenomena that happened early this morning, and this is analogous in some ways, I suppose. I live up in the Gorge. And I was listening to OPP NPR, and we listened by a relay tower here. It was taken over by a Christian radio station. And I really was disbelieving because the air is clear, there's no wind, there's nothing going on. So I just thought that was an apt little analogy. Not that there's a problem with it being a Christian radio station, but it took me about 2 minutes to realize this cannot possibly be OPB. Anyway, I like to listen to you too, and I do alternately. As a child, I did exactly what Diana did. We had the May baskets, and we hung on doorknobs and rang the doorbell and ran away. We had maypoles. We had not a clue. But as you said, we were children of the Cold War era. And I'm 66, so that, you know, I'm just a little older than she. But as I began my career, I joined a labor union immediately and was a member for, I would say, close to 25 years. And then I entered management permanently, and when I did that, of course, I lost my right to belong to a labor union according to the law. But my heart is still there, and I believe very passionately for workers' rights, and I appreciate this opportunity to express that this morning. So thank you for this show that I am serendipitously listening to.
Well, right on.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
And helping occupy the airwaves and okay. taking it back from the Christian radio. So we do have more callers on the air. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a book right now that's wonderful. The National Home Library Foundation, Sherman F. Mill, editor. This one is called Do You Know Labor? Facts About the Labor Movement by James Myers. And again, that's, I suppose you could get on the web and check out National Home Library Foundation. This particular book was published in 1940, which is a wonderful time to have a book like this written for the mass public, because pre-war, pre-McCarthy and that sort of thing.
Does it say anything about May Day specifically?
Oh, well, yeah. It's how do I put this? It's very non-emotional, but it uses language that is so rich, you know, that you don't get today. And there is at least two chapters here that deal with the international awareness and all the aspects of what May Day represents. Mm. And it looks like there's like 22 chapters.
Huh. Be nice to make that into a little zine or something, those chapters.
Oh, that's a great idea. It's not a huge book here. Let's see how many pages. 122 pages. And it's meant to reach a wide audience. It's almost like a Library of Congress type publication.
Great.
So
well, thanks.
National Home Library Foundation. Also check out I.F. Stone, an old newspaper editor from the day. But I do think that the same reason we don't have Labor Day or a labor section in the paper anymore, which there used to be, right next to the business section, believe it or not, is, you know, the same reason we don't have Labor Day, is the same reason we don't have, in America, a day off, a national holiday for voting day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. And we do have one more caller. Lynn, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. And you called... You got me just as I had my mouth full, so good timing.
Well, spit it out. No, just kidding. Hey.
So, first, a shout out to my two fellow workers, with Tomas and Ash. They're both great organizers and great leaders in the whole working class, and I'm always glad to hear them on at KBOO.
Thanks, man.
And one thing, and I was glad you mentioned the connection with the immigrant workers. Another aspect of May Day, which I know I haven't heard much about, excuse me, was that it was about the 8-hour day.
Right.
Hello?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're here.
And that was a huge fight around the country. And I was just looking up something I'd encountered years before I even moved here, because you were talking about mining. And in 1894 in Cripple Creek, Colorado, there was basically a flat-out war. And what it was about was all the gold mine owners decided that they didn't want to pay people for an 8-hour day anymore. They wanted to move the workday to 10 hours, but keep the pay the same.
Yeah.
And I think this has a lot of echoes with things right now.
Yeah.
And something you may know, that there's been analyses that have been put out that one, I believe this is actually what's done in Germany, is that shortening the workday and the work week is one way to cut down on unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I'm self-interested in this because I was laid off in January.
Okay, Lynn, sorry, you know, the last caller always has difficulties here on talk radio because we kind of are running out of time. I thank you for calling and all the other callers. Appreciate it. Once again, tomorrow, May Day, South Park Block starts at 3 p.m. Come and join us. Last words?
Solidarity forever.
Right on. Dick Goggin, we're going out with. My name's Paul. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland.
Come follow me, workers. We toil night and day by hand and by brain to earn your pay for centuries long past. For no more than your bread have bled for your countries and counted your dead in the factories and mills, in the shipyards and mines. We've often been told to keep up with the times, but our skills are not needed. They've streamlined the job and we're slide rule and stopwatch our blind day of raw die. But when the sky darkens and the prospect is war,
given a gun and then pushed to the fore and expected to die for the land of our birth, though we've never owned one handful of earth.
KBOO Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present the May film in the monthly sex workers film series, Mr. Angel, on Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. Shot over 6 years, Mr. Angel is a documentary that chronicles the life of Buck Angel, a transgender advocate, educator, and porn pioneer. Again, that's Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street. More information about this film and the Sex Workers film series can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
May 2nd, 12 noon to 1:30, I will be featuring the music of Lori Lewis. The San Francisco Bay Area was a hotbed of traditional and acoustic music beginning in the 1960s. Starting with the Arkansas Sheiks and the Good Old Persons, she then started her own band, the Grant Street String Band. For the last dozen years, she and her partner, Tom Rosen, have fronted her band, always attracting the highest quality musicians. Blending traditional and contemporary material, she has forged a unique sound. A limited number of One Evening in May, her brand new CD, will be available.